Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing. Mate, have you plenty of sleep now that the Olympics is over?
Yep, catching up.
Yeah?
Yeah. But, you know, obviously we want to talk about the boomers.
Well, we do, because we're proud of them.
But, we love them.
We just missed out. I just had a quick look before. It's our fourth placing since 1988.
Yep.
So just missed a medal.
We did. Look, congratulations, lads, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Tough day at the office. The drive by that Spanish guy, Paddy Mills, got out the way.
Mm.
I mean, you know, there was no foul there. But anyway, that's tough. I thought the Spanish played, on the whole, a very good game.
Mm.
And I thought when we started to take them on, that's when we started to, you know, bring out our natural flair of the game we play. And I think that was important. But, you know, look, on the whole, the Spanish, did they deserve the medal? Probably. You know, I thought, you know, we came out of the blocks a lot better than we did against Lithuania, but ultimately, congratulations for a good position. But it's definitely onwards and upwards in Tokyo.
For Tokyo, yeah. Well, I mean, we've got a pretty good, exciting list. We just got to just help Andrew Bogut get some longevity so that he can stick around and hang out for that one.
So, Andrew, just get yourself on some ice, mate, and we'll just sort of basically settle yourself down and we'll bring you out, just like that big Spanish centre who basically was the difference on the night. It was 36, so I'm expecting you to suit up again, Andrew, if you're listening.
Yeah, Andrew, I'd like to see you suit up again. And a noticeable absence of footy talk. You know, Dane Swan's retired this week.
So, yep.
Mate.
The tat's gone.
Mate, what a legend he is. 258 games.
Correct.
Runs like he shouldn't be an athlete. He's got a Brownlow medal. He's got a premiership medallion. I'd hate to pump up Collingwood ties, but he actually does impress me. I'm sure off the field he's got some interesting lifestyle choices. But
you said that, not me.
I'm talking about snowboarding. I'm talking about...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's going to Europe for 6 months. But,
true. Loves his music.
Yeah,
loves a quiet ale.
Mate, if it wasn't for him, no one would have a tattoo in the AFL, I wouldn't have thought.
No,
he was a trendsetter.
A quality player, loved the competition, you know, didn't care too much for all the paraphernalia that went with the professionalism of it. But, you know, as soon as he crossed that white line, he gave everything, and that's all we ask for of our players who wear the jersey. So
there's the token Collingwood shout-out. You can return serve.
Oh, Pav.
Oh, I thought you'd forgotten for a second then.
Oh,
I thought you'd forgotten.
Superstar of the competition.
Yeah.
Absolute superstar
that
of the competition.
That was a test. I was seeing if he was going to return the tennis.
Well, if he had played in Melbourne, he would be bigger than Ben Hur. Yeah, that's how good he was to move through the midfield in the peak of his powers. I saw him play a game at the G against the Pies where he was effectively the lone hand against the entire team. They didn't win that day. I think we tied a job up by about 48 points, something like that. But the point, he's a bona fide superstar.
He would have played more games than Boomer Harvey if he didn't have to travel from across the Nullarbor every second week.
Oh, I think you're right there. Mm. So, just a gun.
So, there we go, folks. There's a little bit of sports banter we haven't done for a little while. So,
Footy banter, anyway.
Footy banter. So, mate, we're going to... hopefully provide some frameworks for people just to think about today.
Yeah.
The 10 biggest risks when investing in property. And we wanted this to be a takeaway for everyone where they can pretty much start from wide out, and we'll go right down to our number one risk, or, you know, number one is it's just we'll build it up to the point where this is the one that everyone faces the most.
Yeah.
And so stick around for that, folks, to see what we're talking about right at the end of the podcast. But mate, kick it off.
Yeah, so we've organised our list into the boring but important. And by that we mean we're going to start off with the macro ones, so the big ones. So we're talking about general market and economic risk. So these are the things that are sometimes outside of our control in regards to, we don't make up the economy as an individual that's an investor. We're not responsible for the broader economy, but there is absolutely big risk here. So things like buying in a marketplace where there's economic risk or economic downturn or the overall general economy in that particular location is sluggish, well, then usually you're not necessarily going to see the rising tide lifting all ships. So the property market could be impacted by that. So just in that sort of boring framework around professional advice, we always talk about general market and economic risk, and that still plays true in the property investment space.
Sounded like a disclaimer to me, mate.
It's a good one, isn't it? Well, that's how they do it.
Snuck it in.
Yeah, it's all professional. Look, one of the things we want to do on this podcast is not just talk about some of the general flavoured ones. We also, you know, there is some serious ones that we also need to cover off. So here we go.
All right, let's start from the top. Out nice and wide. General market and economic risk is really the first one, an uncontrollable one,
yep,
that a property investor will face.
Correct.
And effectively, it really comes down to our economic activity, human interest, human behaviour. The first one, economic activity.
Correct.
If that's vulnerable, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, what are some of the examples? Obviously, we're seeing the Darwin market, we're seeing the Adelaide market, the Perth, the Hobart market, a bit sluggish. Mm-hmm. And you can relate that to the state's GDP. You can relate that to the cities, you know, gross domestic production and what's going on, job attraction. So all of those things, you know, jobs then lead to sentiment. You know, if I'm feeling good about my job, I'll spend a little bit more, which means the economy moves on a bit. And I'll potentially, if things are really good, I'll look to invest. So those types of things need to be in play in terms of looking at it from a macro perspective.
Correct. And if you're in a state where the government's poorly managing it or not encouraging investment or not encouraging investment in jobs, you know, that's something that's very much out of control that fits into that category. So there you have it, folks. The number one biggest risk that you face when investing in property from a macro perspective is just the general market and economic risk. What's the next one, mate?
Legislation and regulation risk. So we're talking about law changes here. Some of the big things that that we see from government around changes. Now, obviously the no-brainer one is around negative gearing. Mm. You've heard us talk about this on the podcast before. If you're new to the podcast, again, a little reach out, start from the front, work your way through the episodes. You'll get greater knowledge by doing that. But we're talking about if there were changes in negative gearing, that is outside of my control. And so ultimately, what will it mean for my investment? Will it impact on my investment? Well, that's obviously depending on the area that you pick and the ultimately property that you pick as part of that. So that's an interesting one. Another example of that, Bryce, is...
Yeah, well, you don't have to look too far back for that negative gearing ones, with the recent election, but APRA, how they've changed the rules for lending. And so people who are building a portfolio based on a thin sort of thread of, you know, high LVRs, putting the least amount of capital that they could so that they could leverage further. That was knocked on the head when APRA made some changes about over 90% lending and also how much percentage of their loan book could be created for new business for investors. So if you were investing in property and you already had that strategy in place and outside of your control, your access to funds were limited, that's going to have a huge risk on it.
Yeah, so I'll finish that one off by saying... the foreign investments, they've now taxed foreign investors as well. This is another example of it. We also saw...
$2 million.
Yeah, in New South Wales. We also saw the state government in New South Wales about sort of almost 10 years ago now introduce an investor tax on property, which dampened construction and building. And they were all the things that sort of made a market, not necessarily the right time to get into that particular market. So it can happen. It's outside our control. We just need to be aware of it. So when we are making decisions, that we know that the game of property can change and some of the big parts of those changes can be driven by the people who control the laws of this land. And that's what we're talking about.
Very good. The next one is property cycle risk. And that's largely a timing play because, you know, we all agree that it's time in the market that's really important. But if you actually get into a market that's already had a very good run and you might not see any growth for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, and then, you know, towards the end of the cycle, you see some growth, nobody wants to be in a position where they're forking out money to hold property and it's got no reasonable expectation for growth. So think Perth at the moment, think Darwin. And Robert Kiyosaki always says that risk is a measure of knowledge. So the more, if you're looking at a deal compared to someone who's never looked at a deal before, your risk to their risk is probably enormously different based on the exactly the same deal. And, you know, in property cycle risk, you can look at it that way as well, because even though Perth has got low sentiment, it's in the wrong time of the cycle for a headline, There's, you know, we only talked to Damien recently on the couch. Mm. There's enormous opportunity for people who see the opportunity of buying countercyclically.
Correct.
And being in a non-competitive situation where they can actually buy properties that they can add value to, maybe in a land banking scenario, they get some town planning changes. I even saw an article that Damien was chatting about in Willoughby over in Perth, where they've had some rezoning done on those properties. So if you can get in early and you can see the risk as being just a measure of knowledge, you can counteract that. But generally speaking, if someone's got a conservative, passive approach to building a portfolio, there is property cycle risk.
Yeah, the wise ones go where no one normally would be going at that time of the cycle.
Good one.
You know, so that's the reality of what we're sort of talking about here. And that is this sort of whole psychology of market sentiment. So we're all sheep when it comes to investing. If we see the share market going really well, we all want to get in there. It's just the last ones to the party are usually the ones that get burnt the most. So it is the brave man or the wiser man who goes into a marketplace that everyone else is sort of saying, are you going in there? So take Perth, for example, and Darwin, for example. We are very closely monitoring those two markets right now. Mm. And as soon as we think that we've seen the bottom, then you watch us. We will take ourselves and our clients into those particular markets because that's the right time. But we just don't want to be caught in the cycle where if we get in there now and it's 3 or 4 years away, that's 3 or 4 years of interest that we have to pay, and we don't want to be caught in that. You know, that's dead money, that's opportunity cost. So we want to make sure that we're definitely confident that the bottom's out and we're getting that economic stimulus and that market cycle sort of interacting at the same time.
For me, the property cycle risk is amplified by the fact if you get the asset selection wrong, because I've been doing this for 18 years. So yeah. I don't actually see the same level of risk as someone who's just starting out. Yeah. Because I've got enormous confidence in Australia as a marketplace. We're a first world country, we've got a stable government, we're financially stable, lots of people want to get our resources, our food. So I'm enormously confident in the big picture of Australia. But if I'm in the wrong cycle and I'm in the wrong product in the wrong cycle, that's just a nightmare.
Totally. So in a way, it's a bit outside of our control, but as smart investors, we should be able to take control of that and wrestle it across into our control by picking the right area at the right time, and not be one of the sheep in following the FOMO that can sometimes happen in particular markets, thinking you've got to get in. If you're last of the party, it's a dead duck.
Very good, Ben. So we've got general market and economic risk, we've got legislation and regulation risk, we've got property cycle risk, and we've got...
Well, basically, we've got climate risk, which is weather risk. It's, you know, what's happening, and this is a new one in a way, but we are seeing more dramatic weather events. You know, some people may disagree with us, some climate skeptics, but I think the proof's in the pudding. Won't name names, but they know who they are. Can't believe they get a TV show and a column in the paper. But anyway, we move on.
I don't even know who he's talking about.
Don't you? Oh, you should know. If I mention AB, that might work it out. Listeners might work out who that is. If we've got flooding, so absolutely we need to understand peak floods, events, storm events, bushfire events, those types of things that will risk the marketplace on a macro level. So, you know, again, these are some of the things are outside our control. But if we make a decision not to invest because of climate change, you're still going to have to be around. You're still going to have to live a little while longer.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to sort of just live in a box and don't do anything. No. The way you can mitigate that, because I agree, is in Brisbane, for example, we can actually see records of the 1974 and the 2011 floods.
Yep.
So we as an advisory team will not buy a property for a client that's been affected by a flood prior.
Yep.
What's interesting about the 74 and the 2011 floods is 74 was higher water level. Yep. 2011 affected more people because of density. Yeah. But 74 flood level was actually higher.
Ah, okay, good.
So the point of that is you can mitigate against weather risk, because Brisbane's the river city. It's got a big dam that they have to let go, and there's a huge amount of rain, and that's got to run downstream. And you know, we all remember seeing that boardwalk down at the
drifting
bottom of the
off and getting smashed under the Story Bridge.
Absolutely. But we don't buy something that's been previously affected. Now, there are people who are speculators. I've got a mate who bought a property that was underwater in Indooroopilly and has made quite good dollars because it was 35 years between floods. And so he's just taken a punt and said, right, I can buy cheap, I can renovate, add some value and move on, and people will forget quickly.
And they may change the infrastructure to divert a bit of that water. They'll say that these events, even though they're 1 in 100 year events, we know will happen twice in 40 years or 35 years.
It's interesting, 1 in 100 years, it doesn't mean it happens once every 100 years, it just means there's a 1% chance of it happening every year.
Correct. So that's a really good point.
So weather risk is definitely a risk, but you can mitigate. You look at the storms. The storms are probably the hardest one, because up in far north Queensland, they've got insurance premiums that reflect that that's pretty sort of ad hoc and random. But ultimately, they survive as long as you can have a look at previous flood level history. That's a good
one. And beachfronts. Let's not forget the rising king tides, these big storm surges. We see videos of and news stories of houses falling into oceans and all of that because of these larger storm events. So, beachfront land, which we would consider as absolute scarce, you want to make sure that if you're buying beachfront land, what are the risks associated with erosion and those types of things as well. So it's not just the big storms that come through and the flooding, it's also these storm surges in these locations where what we would class as beautiful prime real estate can also be impacted through weather events.
So the question of those sorts of properties are they investment grade? Because they make for beautiful owner-occupier residences, but for most people, they can mitigate the fact that it's probably a fair way out of the bell curve. Not impossible by any stretch.
Definitely not.
But out of the bell curve for most property investors who are looking to probably spend sub-million to buy. So, mate, that's kind of the put it boring but important, the macro view. So general market and economic risk, legislation and regulation risk, property cycle risk, and I guess climate and weather risk. And then we sort of drill down into the ones that we can control. So the first one of those, I think, is planning risk. And we see that a lot. In fact, I think that's probably for the vast majority of property investors that we actually see is, if they don't have that, Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind and reverse engineer. Yeah. I see a lot of people don't begin with the end in mind, innocently, because they don't know what to do to begin with the end in mind.
Yep.
But without that, the analogy is you're just a rudderless yacht. Whatever breeze comes, whatever wind blows, is what your portfolio is likely to do. How many times you see someone who's capital growth and they're going to develop and subdivide and do passive income and do options and vendor find? They're just seminar junkies, and without a strategy, they're just blowing wherever the wind blows them.
One of the most important ones, and I reckon that's why we led with this one, because this is the ones we are in control of. So this is about you, and this is about what you can do. You know, plan to become what you plan to become. You've heard us talk about this in the podcast before. This is where the rubber hits the road once you know what that pathway looks like for yourself. I've seen far too many people buy properties that they can afford today but can't afford in 3 years, and they have to flog the property and lose cash. So, this is, we're now getting into the hip pocket stuff that has real impact in terms of what it looks like for us. So it's absolutely critical, and we absolutely harp on about this. And if I say absolutely one more time, slap me. But it's important to understand that plan to become what you plan to become.
Plan to become what you plan to become. Be a farmer, not a hunter, Ben. Be a farmer, not a hunter. You need to know when to plant the crops and when to harvest the crops.
Absolutely.
Don't go for the quick kill straight away. So throw the spear or have the... Too many property investors want to be a hunter and get the outcome straight away.
Totally.
Be a farmer. Know when to plant, know when to cultivate, know when to harvest, and that'll serve you well in that planning space.
All right, next one.
Is advice risk.
Advice risk.
So... this one here, I reckon most of the our listeners, and it's probably the number one reason we started the podcast, is people are very susceptible to getting advice in this industry from people from the wrong people. And I always say it's the outsourcing of understanding. You can outsource the execution.
Say it again. Say it again, Bryce.
Don't outsource the understanding. Outsource the execution, but not the understanding. By that, if you do outsource the understanding, you are very susceptible to the character of your advisor.
Mm.
And in saying that, you may start out with an advisor who is very, what's the right word? They've got your best interest in mind. Mm-hmm. They've got the big picture in mind. Yep. They might come up against they might get into a divorce themselves. They may get into gambling. There's a whole range of life stuff they can get in, and they can start out one way and end another way. So if you outsource the understanding, you are susceptible to the character of your advisor, which is very, very vulnerable space to be in.
I spend a lot of time in the clients that we work with to explain to them that we're taking them on a journey and they're holding us accountable. So there's an accountability story here. So by that I mean, if you know, we ask a couple of questions around your level of knowledge and your level of experience as a property investor, and we ask you to rank that between 1 and 10. And it's really important to understand why we're asking you to rank that, because we want to see where you're at and where we can take you. And the more knowledge we build, and this is why we're content rich, not only on the podcast that we provide, but also on our website. We've got how-to videos everywhere, from beginner to advanced. So it's really important that through building up that knowledge, you can hold your advisor accountable, just like the advisor is hoping to coach you on the journey of your wealth creation that you're doing. So trusted advisor should always be doing that. And so what's the tip here to make sure that you don't get caught through the wrong advice risk? And that is, ask lots of questions. You know, come armed with all strong questions around experience, performance. If they can't answer the question logically, if the response that they give you is not logical and it's not covered in gobbledygook and all these mixed messages, or it's too macro and it's not micro, you know, I hear plenty of people saying, oh, we've got a school going in here, we've got eventually a train line going in here, and there one day will be a supermarket and a big shopping center. You know, that's not convincing for me. That's not locked away. It's speculation. So it's important that, you've heard us harp on before about the big spruikers, the ones that set up the production workshops and bring you along and, you know, tell you that they're going to work in your best interest, but they've got stock, whatever it may be. This is one about getting into the minutiae of the advisors that you're working with and testing them on all the different levels.
Oh, love the way you put it. If you can't explain the topic simply, you don't know it well enough. So they should be able to dumb it down to whatever level you need for it to be understood. I understand there's different pitches that you need to do. And Freakonomics, it's a book by Levy and Dubner. And they say that economics is just the study of human incentives. So you need to understand how your advisor's getting paid. If they're getting paid fee for service for their 100% income from you versus they're getting paid from a product.
Yep.
And it's okay, whatever it is, but know that baseline information to protect yourself from this risk.
Because, I mean, you watch A Current Affair, you watch Today Tonight, all those types of shows, Four Corners, 7:30, whatever it may be, and you see the innocent mum and dad who are sitting there and they say, oh, we just trusted the advisor, they told us to do this, so we did. Come on, guys, you know, listen to yourselves. If you don't understand it, don't invest in it. Isn't that what Warren Buffett once said? If I can't understand it, I'm not going to invest in it. So don't be caught in the whole activity that everyone else is doing it, so we'll do it too. And you know, if they're quoting returns that are too good to be true, they often are. You know, so it's really important to understand that you've got to take some responsibility, and you can mitigate that risk by, you know, understanding what you're about to embark on, and build up that knowledge. And hopefully this podcast is helping you do that.
Yeah, when you said if it's too good to be true, it usually is. One of the things that we do in our team, because we back test the performance of the assets.
If it's
an abnormal outcome, we dig harder.
Yeah.
Because we go, well, there's reason why 10% roughly is where it's at. So if something comes back at 17 or 18 over a long period of time, I tell the guys, double check it. Do it again.
Yeah.
There's a typo. There's something in the formula that needs to be, and not always, but if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is, because over a long period of time, there's been consistent returns that you get from your money. And if it's getting above average returns, it's more speculation.
Yep. Love it.
Than investing.
All right. Next one on the list, money management. One of my favorite topics in terms of poor money management. If you can't manage your cash flow, if you can't get your house in order, then it's not a good idea to invest in property, because usually we're going to involve debt as part of that conversation. So coming back to our ABCD, you know, here we are in cash flow and borrowing. So there's several parts of this. You know, we're talking about borrowing risk, we're talking about liquidity risk, we're talking about all of these things, and, you know, impatient risk and temptation risk around buying things that you really don't need. And then all of a sudden you get yourself into the cycle of bad debt versus good debt, or what I like to refer as productive debt, because I don't think there is such a thing as good debt. I'd prefer to invest without debt, but I want my debt to be productive for me. That's just a, you know, terminology thing for me.
Horrible, tolerable, and productive.
Oh, go for it. Take it.
Horrible debt is credit card debt, consumer items. Tolerable is the mortgage, because it still goes in value. And then productive debt.
Productive debt. I love that. Can one more time?
Horrible debt, right, tolerable debt, and productive debt.
Cool. So that's where we sit with money management. And we've done other episodes, Money Smarts, on this that we you know, just have a look at the titles of the episodes. You'll find it, because I have no idea which episode number it is.
It's where Ivor scrambles.
But we'll find it somewhere there. Ivor, thank you. Look, it goes without saying. If you can't manage the money and you have a huge amount of money tied up in property, that can also be the case. Now, I'll add to that. Just something just jumped into my head.
This is where the gold lives.
Who was I talking to yesterday where they were sort of talking about... Oh, I was talking to a guy who reached out to us about a job here at
Hamilton Island. We were talking about that this morning.
We were talking about Hamilton Island as well, so that's where that's jumped out. Yeah. All right. So this this guy has reached out to me. God, I think I could remember. Tony, was it Tony? I can't remember.
Let's call him Tony for the sake of this.
Sorry,
exercise.
Tony, if I've got your name wrong, because I know you listen to the podcast. He's a real estate agent at the moment, but he's just not fulfilled. Okay, mm-hmm. So he's seeing people make decisions about selling their home, and he's got a financial planning background, right? So he's actually in this case going, oh, this is interesting. I've got this financial planner mentality, and I think you can hold on to this property because I know how to manage. You know, I can see your finance. It's like, but I've got a conflict here because I'm here to sell your property because you want to sell it. But he knows that if they held on to it for 10 years' time, they'll look back, and that's money management risk right there. That's opportunity cost. It's all of those things.
I would say if you're a poor money manager before you buy an investment property, it's not going to get better. It's actually going to amplify your weakness if you buy an investment property, because leverage is a great friend, but an awful, awful, awful enemy. So money management is critical. And under that is, you know, you could lose your job. And and that's probably comes under inside your control and outside your control.
Correct.
But if you lose your job, that really throws money management. Let's be honest, that's probably a critical factor for money management if you do that. So the thing about liquidity being a liquidity risk with property, if you plan well enough, Ben, as you well know, liquidity can be something that doesn't have to worry you, because sure, it takes a while to sell the property.
Yes.
But if you've planned well enough in advance with buffer.
Yeah.
Liquidity is just as simple as logging online and tapping into an emergency fund.
Yeah, a lot of people think that there's no liquidity in property. Whereas if you've got that fund, that is real liquidity in my view. Like, yeah, if you've got an equity release and you've got it sitting there, you are controlling that cash. And so that's the science of mitigating the risk of money management. So that's another great little tip. And it was Tony who I spoke to. So thanks. I just had to check that. But yeah. Sorry, Tony.
Shout out to Tony.
Shout out to Tony.
In fact, Marty, we know as well, is having that same chat with him, a client of his. Wants to sell a property, a really scarce asset in Yarraville, a four-bedroom house in Yarraville on a good block of land with a north-facing backyard. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to earn a crust from selling this house, but you're mad. You should keep it. But he wants to sell it. But it's interesting that he had that chat.
That's where we go. That was a good one. What's next? Number eight.
Well, the next one is, now we're down to bricks and mortar. So there's a risk around the actual property.
Yep.
But a lot of them can be mitigated quite easily. First one for me is poor asset selection.
You heard us drum on about this all the time.
If that's new to anyone here, just rewind 76 episodes. We bang on it about that hard. So that's controllable.
Yes.
But the other one is control risks. And we have talked about this before on the podcast. But
yep.
Areas where things happen to your property that are outside of your control.
Yeah, so some of the cases can be, examples, body corporates. So you're buying into a body corporate. Now, usually you don't know how many owners are on the body corporate, but imagine if you bought into a body corporate property and there were six properties, and as you bought one of those properties, you found out that someone owned four of the others. So all of a sudden, the body corporate voting rights are not in your favor. You are a minority operator inside that body corporate. So if that person who owns four wants a new roof, want all these things done, it's very difficult for you to counteract that. And so all of a sudden this control risk can also be part of that play, where what's going to happen here is you're going to be challenged around special levies and extra costs. So all of that return that you thought you were going to be able to receive can be chewed up in additional expenses. So it's really important, again, when we're looking at the actual property selection and looking at the risk of buying right, wrong location, right or wrong property, that you understand control. Because a lot of people invest in property, Bryce, don't they, for control? Because it's a tangible asset, you know, we can knock on it, we can think about it, it's real, we can improve it, we can do all those things. And that's what allows us to have the confidence around borrowing the money that we do to take ownership of that property.
Well, one of the reasons people like real estate is for that control, Ben, unlike a financial product where a regulation change can just affect that. But that's only, you only get that through experience by knowing that you can lose control by the description that you just described. But I would say to people that just a checklist before you buy properties, just to see if there is an imbalance of power on a body corporate. Because the reason I say that is because so many people say to me, Ben, you see it all the time, I'm not going to buy in a body corporate because I don't like body corporates. Mm. So I don't want to fester the negativity around that, because I reckon there's some fabulous body corporates that you should embrace.
Yep, great properties.
But it is a control risk that you need to be aware of.
And then some of the other ones is, okay, we've picked the right location, we think we've got the right property, and we're going to go off and buy it without a building and pest inspection. So now we're in control of this decision, guys. So why aren't we doing a building and pest on the property? I've got a case at the moment where they're leaving their charge really late. And I'm saying, have you got that building and pest inspection organised? Oh, just probably haven't had time. You know, I've been studying. It's like, whoa, you know, it's such an important decision. What if half the wall or half the roof that you can't see is going to collapse and is a $30,000 or $40,000 rebuild, refix? That stuff is in our control. So we try and mitigate risk as much as we can. This is our defense application in our ABCD. And part of that should be that we get the professionals to take a look and share their opinion to us.
Very good, Ben, because it's easy to walk through a property and get carried away with the emotional.
Yeah, the aesthetics.
Looks good. How many times does people go back to the pre-settlement inspection, a week before settlement? They go, I didn't notice that crack before. Notice that before. Because their blinkers were different when they were going through. So it's for 300 in Melbourne here, because it's $395.
Cheap.
Pretty cheap insurance.
So, very cheap insurance. So that's about actual property risk. So there's asset selection, building, making sure it's everything there, and then control. How much control can you have on it? And then also understanding what the neighbours are about to do, developments and things, subdivision that's going to go on next door, and changes to the street or whatever's going to occur. You just need to do your due diligence, the old DD word.
Bit of DD, and I can't say it, so I don't say it very often on the podcast. Due diligence. My team just hangs it on me for that, so that's okay. I'm happy that I can't say due diligence very easily. General market and economic risk, legislation and regulation risk, property cycle risk, weather and climate risk. That's our top four. They are macros we can't control. We went into the micro. Planning risk, then advice risk, then money management risk, then the actual property. There's some risks. So we rounded out the last two, Ben. The day-to-day minutiae of the stuff. So this covers quite a few things, but kick it off.
Yeah, so what we're referring to, okay, we own the property now. So what can go wrong? Okay, well, we've got a few things. We can pick the wrong property manager. We can pick the wrong tenant. We can, do some things wrong in terms of maintenance and upkeep. So we don't do preventive maintenance, we just do repairs. And some of that preventive maintenance, such as painting it or doing a touch-up paint, as opposed to, waiting 2 or 3 years and then all of a sudden we have to repaint the whole thing again because we didn't do, now by not painting it, the woods rotted around the windows, so we're not going to get another 10 years out of those windows anymore. Whereas if we had done a preventive paint job around the windows, that would have made it waterproof a little bit better for that period of time, so we could have made our asset last longer. Because again, this is about return on investment. It's not about a pretty property, but if you don't keep your property in a good order, they can come back and bite you on the bum.
Very true, very true. The other one is, effectively a vacancy.
Yeah.
Good one. That's a risk, but it's a mitigating risk as well. You can mitigate it quite comfortably by a couple of things. One, realizing that the cycle's bent. So we've just come through winter, and some properties that even here in Melbourne that would normally tenant very, very quickly have taken a little bit longer over this winter than seasonally. So have an awareness around when you have your leases expiring, because January, February, March, poof, they just walk out the door.
Yeah.
July, August, September, mate, people are watching the footy and they're in front of the fire and they don't want to move. So
yeah, they're settled.
Particularly in the southern states. And so those are the things that we need to be wary of. But also back at the due diligence stage.
Ooh, nice. Got that one out all right, Tom?
We're checking vacancy as part of our entry indicators before we buy, just to have an awareness around that. But if you're buying in an area that's is in demand, and you're conscious of cycles and you price it right, that's how you mitigate the vacancy risk.
I'll give you an example. So I've got a property in Flemington. So now Flemington's a great sort of Melbourne area. It's walking distance to Racecourse Road, and it's got all of the bells and whistles, the train station. So all of the stuff that, you know, I advocate to buy, I bought. So I bought this property. And there was one period there where for 6 weeks it wasn't rented. And so now usually we work on 4 to 5 weeks annually in our modelling. So we're very conservative on occupancy rates, or vacancy rates as we call them. Now, did I get worried about that? No, because the next tenant stayed for 7 years. So there's a great example. Right. I've even focused in on the actual 4 weeks being vacant, and I haven't had that. I've had, over that 7 year period, I've had basically a 98% occupancy, which has been perfect. So I factor in those 6 weeks that it took to get the right tenant into the property, and then all of a sudden, and so usually you might find the average tenancies are a couple of years. So, you know, if it's taken four or five or 6 weeks to rent it out, usually I'm going to roll over and make sure that they'll stay on for a little period. And they might go to month, and I'm happy for them to go to month. Again, I'll be talking to my property manager, and we haven't spent a lot of time on that, but we've done, you know, we've had professional property managers on, Carolyn Wright from your property manager. So, you know, people like that who are professionals at what they do, and I take their advice in terms of attracting the right tenant at the right time.
Very good, Ben. You're very wise. You should do this for a living. So the last one we're going to talk about today is probably the one that's universal to everyone, Ben. And I'll start it with a story.
Sure.
Someone is sitting in the shade today because they planted a tree a long time ago.
Wait, can I just bring the violin in?
Mate, someone is sitting in the shade today because they planted a tree a long time ago.
I just feel like it just needed that sort of, you know, production over the top of it. How did I go?
Mate, if you're trying to charm a snake, it was perfect.
Needed to bring the orchestra in, as I can see myself sitting under that tree.
So the listeners, as they're bracing themselves for your sign off at this point, they know it gets a little bit less serious. But if you're wondering what that means, is that there's a time and a place for everything. And if you want to enjoy the benefits of investing, the earlier you can get in, the better. So the biggest risk is human behaviour. And that's procrastination.
Biggest killer of wealth that we know.
It's procrastination.
It's the risk of not doing anything.
Because there's people who are listening to this right now, Ben, who that's just struck a chord with them.
Yeah.
We know that because we see lots of them in our business where they go, I've been meaning to do this for filling the gap, 18 months, 2 years, 6 years.
Yeah.
So there are some people who are listening to this and they'd be thinking, that's actually right. Because everyone's got the story about the one that got away or the one that could have been.
And if you read some of the case studies in some of the magazines like Australian Property Investor, Your Investment Property Magazine, etc., and they have the case studies, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned? I should have started earlier is one of the classics. Oh. It always comes up.
It's always there.
So we want to make sure that you understand what is procrastination. So we spend all this time talking about all these risks, and it is important. This is your financial well-being and your family's future, prosperity, legacy, whatever you want to call it. And these are serious risks. There are serious risks in investing in property. But the biggest risk of all is to not get the education, not get the knowledge to be able to overcome those risks and make a smart, investigative right. decision around what you're going to do. So don't procrastinate, guys. Eyeball yourself and just say to yourself, these are our goals. If we want to achieve these goals, we need to do something about it. I used to sign off, and I still do. It's a big thing for me, that knowledge is empowering if you act on it. Knowledge is empowering if you act on it. If you don't act on it, it's not knowledge.
Mm.
Okay, you're not using your knowledge. You're not engaging in what you can create. No different than business. You know, you use your knowledge to get to the career you want and the satisfaction you want in that. Use this knowledge to harness that to create a passive income for life.
Well, how do you live yourself with all this wisdom you've got?
Where was that? Mate, I needed that sound thing to come
it's
over.
Star Trek.
It's almost like a preaching session, that one, wasn't it?
But of course, I'm being tongue-in-cheek because there's actually a lot of wisdom in that, mate. So very well said. So there you go, folks. They're the 10 biggest risks when investing in property that we face as property investors. And I'm sure you can relate to some of them. But general market and economic risk, legislation and regulation risk, property cycle risk, weather and climate risk, planning risk, advice risk, money management risk, the actual property risk, the bricks and mortar, the day-to-day minutia risks, and then, of course, the human behaviour risks, which is largely defined by procrastination. So there you have it, Ben. Hopefully that's been some good takeaways. Some of that stuff some people would have heard before, some of it might be new. And what I always say to people is, if you're in either of those two categories, if you've heard it for the first time, you can obviously get some benefit from it. But if you have heard it all before, Ben, but you haven't actually acted on it, it's exactly what you said. It's knowledge, it's not wisdom.
Correct.
So we've got to turn it all into
empower wisdom. Yourself, people. Get out there.
Very
learn
good.
Or leverage from the knowledge of the smart ones who have gone before you.
Do you mind, Yoda? You mind if we call you Yoda?
I'll just try and get Ivis to laugh every now and then.
Yeah, well, a couple of quick ones for you folks. Facebook yes. Live, September 13th.
Beautiful.
If you don't have a copy of the book, you can go on to propertycouch.com.au/book. Type in FB Live,
mm-hmm.
and you get a 30% discount off the recommended retail price.
How much?
30%? 30%? So I'd encourage you to, we would love to have you on Facebook Live and asking those questions, because if we don't get to all of them, we use them as a source of topics to discuss here. But we plan on getting to all of them, don't we, Ben?
We do.
Last week, we mentioned you were on a webinar with Jane Slack-Smith as well, whose strategy is the winner. We've got that on the Property Couch, so you can go and check that out also. Of course, I'm always saying join the conversation. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know. And of course, you might have noticed, Ben, we snuck a little in between us in last week.
We did. We're obviously trying to get the knowledge out there for more and more people, and we do that by reaching out to you and saying, if you love what you hear, vote for us on the current Reader's Choice Awards at your investment property magazine, because the more credentials we potentially have, the more people get to listen to us, and that's really important.
So if you go to Facebook, like us on Facebook, you'll get all the details for that. You can see it on our website. And if you if you're interested in doing that, just rewind one episode. It was a little, it says, can I ask you a favor? Have a little listen to that. I think it goes for about 4.5 minutes, and we'd certainly appreciate your help with that. So
I'm on Sky News.
That closes on the 31st of August, Ben.
31st of August.
Sky News on Monday.
Sky News. So if you want to check us out, Your Money, Your Call.
Yes.
Monday night, 7 o'clock? 8 o'clock. I can't remember. 8 o'clock, a couple of hours, I think, live.
Foxtel subscribers.
Foxtel subscribers, Your Money, Your Call, with Margaret Lomas and the crew. So, flying up to Sydney on Monday morning. And
ring up, folks. Ask him a question that's really tough while he's got the red light on.
But if
really
you do,
tough ones.
If you do, just make sure you say, I love the podcast, the Property Couch. You know, get the plug in there for the Property Couch as well. That'll be great. Now, I
really,
didn't prop that, did
really
I?
Hard ones, folks. Give you deep down, give him the tough ones.
So. And you know, here's a little tip. If I say something like that, that's not on my radar, then the reality is I don't know anything about that suburb because it's not on my radar.
So that's
my little default. There's a little insider tip for everyone.
There you go.
There's my little tip.
If you see a property, Ivis, that says a great this property has great potential, it means it's about to fall over. If Ben says it's not on his radar,
no, it's more around,
he has no idea.
Oh, what do you think about X suburb? You know, I'm thinking about buying something in that, and I'm like, there's 15,000 suburbs. I've never heard of the suburb before. I'm like, well, that one's not on my radar. No, I don't. No, I'm not familiar. No, that's not my... There you go. So you've just got a little bit inside knowledge. Being a live show, I can't sit there and Google it. Oh, no. Oh, that's next to that. Oh, that's next to that.
Hard ones, folks. Send him the hard ones.
Thanks, mate. There we go. Very All right, good. Mate. We're signing off.
Yeah, so one of the basketball nations. I thought I'll go to one of the basketball nations.
Serbian.
So yes. I'm gonna botch this one, if I can tell you. This one's a beauty.
Why stop now?
What do you mean? You haven't botched up any of those? All right, I better get us out of here because we've run over time. Vidimo se sukuru.
There you go, folks. Sounds like one of the ones we've heard before based on that slang.
Well, that's just Japanese almost coming out, man.
But we've enjoyed delivering the 10 biggest risks here this week, and we look forward to seeing you next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about next week, but we'll do what we always do every week. It'll be great.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, I can feel the anticipation building. But until next week, man.
Oh, vadimo se sukuru.
Sukuru. There we go, folks. I'm not sure that was Japanese, consistent, but one thing's very consistent about the show is we will see you next week. See you, folks.